Hour number two of Darren and Dominic on this rainy Monday morning. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. That's where you can find his work when he's not next to me when Willie's on the road. Speaking of Willie on the road.
This is one of those days, by the way, where the weather outside does not match the mood at all.
No.
You know, some days you wake up, it looks like this, and everybody's like, I just want to roll over and go to bed. Today, people, they're ready to go. They're ready to drive in this stuff. They're excited about the weekend, unless maybe you're a Vanderbilt fan. But everybody else is excited regardless of the weather.
It should be about 60 and sunny, really, because that would fit the mood.
Maybe 75.
In this market. Okay, you went greedy, and that's fine. I get it. 75
in
mid-November.
Give me a drink with an umbrella. I mean, that's what this day is all about.
Willie Donick is standing by in Anaheim. Last night, he was in Los Angeles because he was checking out the hardwoods. Vanderbilt didn't get it done on the football side in Columbia, Missouri,
yeah,
but they did get it
good
done
last night
against the Trojans. They get revenge from last year's tough overtime loss at home. Willie, what's up?
Hey, guys, and I was going to definitely mention to Steve, from the Vanderbilt perspective, that it was about as low as you could feel after the loss against Missouri, but it did get a little better last night for sure. It was a nice win for Bryce Drew and company.
Willie, can I jump in there? Because we talked a little bit about this at the beginning, and I gave it from, I guess, my perspective, the outsider, not a Vanderbilt alum or a fan. But I thought the game at Missouri was a total indictment of the coaching staff for starters, because ultimately the buck stops with them. And I thought the way the fourth quarter played out, with the goal line series and personnel and not having Vaughn on the field for three of the four plays and getting stopped, and then the way they come back after the interception on the short field and you don't give the ball to Vaughn on any of those plays and you end up having to punt as opposed to get inning points out of that, then the lack of using a timeout above 2 minutes when the clock is going to start after the Missouri wide receiver went out of bounds, you lose 21 seconds there, then you've got three plays on the final drive where you're throwing short of the sticks and you're losing valuable time throughout there. I just thought they completely mismanaged from personnel to the clock to timeouts the fourth quarter of that game, and cost themselves the best shot to win a game that may ultimately cost them shot a bowl game and maybe eventually Derek Mason his job.
I think the criticism is fair. I honestly did not see the game because it was right alongside of our game, just with all of our preparation and things. I was, you know, following it a little bit, and then I went back. I saw what you wrote, Steve, and you know, I asked a lot of people about it. The way I look at it is this. You know, they have had huge opportunities. You know, they haven't lost to any bad teams. These are all pretty decent teams that they've lost to. But if you look at the opportunities that they've had late in games to pull off wins at Notre Dame, at Missouri, at Kentucky, and then Florida at home, where they jumped out to a big lead, you know, somewhere in there, they're a win short of where they probably should be. You know, you got to hope that if you have all of your attention to detail there, that you've got to get one of those. And so they put themselves behind the eight ball. Now, they can make it right if they can win the last two home games. I think everybody will still feel pretty good about the season. But if they come up short of a bowl game, then I do think you're going to hear even more loud criticism. And I don't know what's been announced. I haven't checked this morning, but I am hearing from a lot of different people that they're on the verge of hiring an athletic director very soon in the next couple of days. So with that in the backdrop, I think it's going to be a pretty interesting 2 weeks for the Vanderbilt football team.
You hearing any names?
The guy I'm hearing from a lot of places is the athletic director at Army. And I believe his name is Corrigan.
Yeah, Boo Corrigan.
Yes, from a family of athletic directors. Has some Notre Dame ties. Has done an outstanding job at Army. At their athletic program. And, you know, so I don't honestly know anything about him. I'm just, you know, just like everybody else trying to figure out. But, you know, there were a lot of Vanderbilt people at the game last night, and I had a chance to talk to some different people. So that's who I'm hearing, and it's coming from a lot of different places, so we'll have to see how it plays out.
What was the atmosphere like for the basketball game last night? Do they even give a crap about basketball out there?
Well, of course, they absolutely gagged against the team that they're not supposed to lose to on the football field the day before.
Correct.
Where they lost a 14-0 lead. We actually got a chance to watch the game against Cal.
So Cal has beaten Washington and USC the last 2 weeks. Explain that one.
Well, you know who's out on that staff is Justin Wilcox, the former Tennessee defensive coordinator, and Peter Sermon. I thought I saw him roaming the sideline. Did I not?
I did not know. I've wondered where Peter was. For Cal?
Yeah. Yes, for Cal.
Wow. Good
Isn't
for
Justin
them.
Justin Wilcox the head coach?
Yes, Justin Wilcox head coach. And Sermon's out there, I think, as like a linebacker coach now.
Good for him.
Yeah, so they're starting to come around a little bit.
Wilcox has done a really good job.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a beautiful on-campus arena, the Galen Center. It's the right size, I think, for them. The stands, you know, pretty go way high up, steep. But unfortunately for them, there was hardly anybody in the upper deck. They announced the crowd of about 3,800. They were loud. They had this really interesting DJ. I mean, he was honestly a DJ. He was playing the music. They have a great sound system. And he was interacting with the crowd on every play, not just between TV timeouts, but, like, when there were stoppages in play, he would come on the microphone and start addressing the crowd. Hey, guys, get into it, and stuff like that. They actually had one play where Vanderbilt was at the free throw line, and if the player missed both, everybody in the arena got free Chick-fil-A. And so you can imagine the crowd screaming and yelling. And, of course, the guy, I think it was Yanni Wetzel, missed both free throws, and the crowd's going wild. They get more excited about that than anything that happened in the game.
Hmm. Well, good win for Bryce Drew and Vanderbilt. Of course, they start off 2-0, so nice win out there to get revenge on last year's fun game to watch, but they came up on the short end in Nashville last year, and they get the win last night. Of course, I searched for the game and couldn't find it because I don't have
Pac-12
Network. Yeah, I don't have it.
If Bill Walton was doing the call, unfortunately, that's the one channel you don't get on DirecTV. I don't know why that is, but it was a great game. Two completely different teams than last year, because if you think about it, Vanderbilt's lineup is completely different. USC lost a couple of guys to the pros, and Benny Boatwright, who is another NBA-bound guy, is still injured. But that being said, USC still had a ton of talent out there. Kevin Porter Jr. is going to go to the NBA, I believe. He fouled out, and he only played about 23 minutes. So it was a very talent-driven game. And I thought that was the thing that stood out to me for Vanderbilt, is these guys, they're at a different level of athleticism. I mean, Simi Chatu got every rebound. I mean, he's amazing. His spring to go up and get rebounds against a talented team like USC. And then Darius Garland, you know, everybody is raving about him. He really could be a one and done. Could be the first Vanderbilt guy to ever be one and done. And Chatu might not be far behind.
It took Vanderbilt until March 3rd last year to win a road game, and they've done it in their first try so far this season.
With freshmen
they kept
leading
their poise. Chatu and Garland each had four fouls midway through the second half. They had to manage a stretch there without both of them, and I thought that was the key to the game. They hung in there. They got good bench minutes. Saban Lee, who had a horrible start to the game, stabilized them. They made some big plays. Joe Toy, the only senior on the team, played an outstanding game. 16 points. He's got his jump shot back, which is a big, big sign of good things if he can maintain this, because he's always been able to get to the basket. He had 9 rebounds. Then Garland and Chatu came back in the game and played smart with 4 fouls, and they got enough done to win it.
The one thing that impressed me the most, real quick, and then I know we got to go to the break, is just that we talked about the Vandy football team and the seniors, the upperclassmen, the veterans not finishing. This is a team of freshmen in their second game on the road against a Power 5 team that's talented that did finish. I think that's a really good sign.
I completely agree. They couldn't hit a free throw early in the game, but they, I think, ended up like 14 for the last 16 to close the game out. So when it was time to make the free throws, they stepped up, even though they had gone through some adversity there.
We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk about the Predators' big win in Dallas. Get you ready for the Predators and the Ducks tonight at the Honda Center. Also touch on the Titans game. I know Willie was watching the game with Skillsy, a Boston guy. We'll learn how that all took place. That's all coming up next on Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. What a win in Dallas, playing catch-up the entire game. They get a penalty. Lundell sent to the box for being a bad boy, slashing Victor Arvidsson. So that win may have come at a cost. We'll get into that in just a second. They pull UC Soros. They get a 6-on-4 situation, and the captain, Roman Josi, makes them pay with 43 seconds left. A very questionable call at the end of regulation. It's how I started post-game. I didn't agree with the call. I thought Spezza was selling it. This is before I knew what Ekholm was going to say after the game, and he said those very words. He did not agree with the call. He thought the same thing. Spezza was selling it. And how fitting that he comes out of the box and finishes off the Stars. That was a great win.
Redemption.
And, you know, Mattias Ekholm is definitely not one that, you know, is going to attract a lot of attention with what he says. He's extremely professional. He's a great interview. But he couldn't hold back. You know, he basically said, yeah, that was sort of karma coming back around because he did feel like Spezza took a dive. And it's so interesting. Spezza was the guy being honored for playing 1,000 games. They went, in my mind, about as far as you can go with the ceremony. It was a sort of a game-long celebration, not only before the game, but throughout TV timeouts. They had more and more people on the Jumbotron, you know, saying thank you and, you know, congratulations. So it was really interesting to watch him throughout the game. He scored a big goal, but then that happens at the end of the game. And, of course, Predator fans probably took a little more satisfaction because a lot of them do remember when Jason Spezza was targeted to be a trade. They had a trade worked out between the Senators and the Predators that would have brought him to Nashville, and he nixed it because he had Nashville on a no-trade list.
Yep, everybody remembers that. I'm going to say he probably would like a do-over if he could go back, although this is...
How many guys in the NHL have Nashville on a no-trade list now?
But
zero?
Not now.
Zero?
Aren't you, if you're the Predators, you're probably glad it didn't happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm talking about him. The regret on his end. I brought it up. So is there any new news on the Victor Arvidsson front, who was just back off the IR and back playing with his team on Saturday? Is there any news on what happened there late in the game when he looked like he was bracing his fall into the boards and took his glove off immediately and was obviously messing with his hand and his wrist? Do we know anything?
Yeah, you could see a specific area there if you were watching the game. The team has not – well, I'll be leaving you guys and heading with the team to the rink, and so we may get something definitive then. So I don't want to speculate too far, but I do think you'll hear some news. I think there is an issue there. I'd be very surprised if he skated out there and was available tonight. So we'll wait for the official word, but I think you can probably look ahead and say that it's gonna be they'll have to go through another stretch here without Victor Arvidsson at least starting tonight. Well, hopefully it won't be too terribly bad. You'll just have to cross your fingers and wait and see.
And Cali Yarncroke, we got a surprise right before puck drop that 19 was out of the lineup. Enter Freddie Gaudreau. So not sure what was going on there.
Not sure on that. Yeah, that wasn't one of those odd situations where he did warm up and then was not able to play. And so, you know, that's one we'll have to wait and see as well to see if he is available tonight. So there might be a couple of guys short. The other guy that is on the trip is Dan Hamhuis. And so at some point he will be close to coming back. Now, you know, what that does do, if one or both Arvidsson and Yarncroke were to go on the injured list, that would make it easier to activate Dan Hamhuis. And keep in mind, too, that later this week, Austin Watson will be eligible to come off the suspended list. So there's going to be some roster movement, I think, one way or the other in the next couple of days. Definitely when Watson comes back.
Ryan Hartman, Austin Watson, when they wrap up the road trip in Arizona against the Coyotes on Thursday is when he's eligible to return. Ryan Hartman tied up the contest in Dallas, little matinee hockey, 12 seconds in to the second period. He continues to shine. That's his fifth goal already on the season. What are you seeing out of 38?
That line has played really well, if you take a look. Ryan Hartman, Nick Bonino, Colton Sissons. Number one, they're doing their job defensively. They're facing tough matchups, and they're also providing offense. It's really interesting. You know, for a while, the narrative was, hey, somebody else has got to score a goal besides the Johansson line. Those guys are carrying them. But ever since Victor Arvidsson got hurt in that Vegas game, initially, it's been everybody else that's come back around. It's like they finally got the message. Or just the law of averages with some good players that they have started to to take shape. So everybody else now is chipping in. But Hartman in particular, I think, is playing his best hockey since he's been a Predator, for sure. Not just the goals, but really all-around play, because, you know, he's getting tough assignments. And now you can put – you have two really good, you know, what I would call shutdown lines, guys who can handle a top-level line like a Nathan MacKinnon line, or the line that they shut down for the Boston Bruins with David Pastrnak and Patrice Bergeron. So that I think, has been a big pillar as to why they're doing so well right now.
Steve Lehman here on Darren and Donick. Willie Donick joining us from out in L.A. ahead of the Predators and Ducks tonight, 9 o'clock puck drop Central Time. And, Willie, as you know, a lot of Predators fans still, when they list the teams they love to hate, the Ducks are very near or at the top of that list because of some of those playoff battles. How similar is that Ducks roster this year, though, to the ones that they love to hate, and what will the matchup look like tonight?
There are still plenty of names that you're going to recognize, and this is maybe a strength and weakness of where the Ducks are right now. They have a lot of money that's tied up in those veteran players. Now, Corey Perry is hurt. He's been hurt for a while, so he hasn't played. But he's taken up a lot of their salary cap. Ryan Kesler and Ryan Getzlaff are still there, making a lot of money. But they're a year older. They haven't lit it up. This Ducks team is second to last in goals scored per game. In fact, the two Southern California teams are the teams struggling to score more than anybody else. And John Gibson, another guy that Predator fans know well, he's been the guy that has sort of kept him afloat. He has a great save percentage, even though the Ducks are giving up a ton of shots. They're giving up the second most shots, but he's keeping them in games. But they've struggled lately. They're just 2-6-2 in their last 10. They are trying to work a lot of new guys into the lineup, but the guy that has really emerged as their best player is Rickard Rakell. And so if Predator fans go back through these last few years when they've met each other in the playoffs, Rakell has gone from a guy that you're like, oh, who's this young guy? Now he's their top guy.
Yeah, he's a really, really good one. Obviously, the Preds have had success in the Honda Center against the Ducks on the road, and have an opportunity tonight to go to 9-0 on the road so far this season. We've talked about it. The success is amazing. But what has it been, Willie, that they have been able to do, particularly on the road, that has made them so good early on this year?
I would say poise is the number one thing that jumps out to me. They believe that they are going to win the game. They expect to win the game. They played a bad second period against an undermanned Stars team that was missing a lot of guys. And I think they were able to identify. You know, maybe they pulled back the reins a little bit. Maybe they thought it was going to be easier. But to their credit, they were able to come out and find a new level in the third period. And, of course, the guy that threw the catfish on there might have changed the mojo a little bit.
That's
was
incredible.
Pretty interesting story. Because it happened so quickly after that. Anybody know what happened to that guy?
He's in prison.
Pictures of him.
He's in prison.
I know there's pictures of the fuzz was surrounding him and his buddies underneath the bowels of the arena there. But I think that's what it is. I think they're able to, whether they're leading or behind, they're able to find the right mental area there. They keep their poise regardless of what's going on in the game, and they're able to have good results. Now, you know, I think if they learn a lesson from the other day, I think you can't take this Ducks team lightly. The Ducks got embarrassed the other day against the Minnesota Wild, so they're going to come out. You know how rugged they like to play and dirty they like to play if they need to. And so the Predators are going to have to handle that because they're going to see an angry Ducks team tonight.
They've sent him to Arlington. He has to help build the Rangers' new stadium. They've put him to work.
Manual
he should get
labor.
Points for wearing a Paul Gostad jersey, though, if that's the guy that threw the catfish, though. We were wondering too. Did they get it locally, or did they bring it in from a Nashville fish market?
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know. But he waited till the third period to do it. And that I feel sorry for all the people around him for two periods. Yikes!
And he didn't like run away. Like if you notice, they threw the thing on there, and then they were like right next to the glass having a big old pep rally over there. You know, it wasn't like they threw it and tried to run out of there before people knew who it was. They flaunted it.
They took ownership.
Well, it inspired the team because they scored two goals to tie it up in a minute 37. So clearly it inspired the team.
No question.
Give us some, if you can, a condensed version of Skillsy's commentary as you watched the Titans-Patriots with him yesterday in Anaheim.
Oh, we had a blast. We were like the sports people yesterday. We got up. Of course, it's a 10 a.m. start here in Southern Cal for the game. So I watched the Patriots-Titans game. We were at a local establishment that had all the games on. Pete Weber and his crew here, he's got a few Buffalo Bills fans with him, so they were watching the Bills absolutely destroy the Jets. Imagine if you went to that game as a Jets fan.
With Matt Barkley, who was brought off the streets that week and carve up the Jets.
And meanwhile, Skillsy was in shock as the Titans just ripped apart the Patriots, really for 60 minutes. It was extremely impressive. And he kept just saying,
the Titans are wicked good. How many times did he say the Titans are wicked good?
Yeah, he was going full on New England, no question about it. You'll have to ask him on the pregame show. And then I drug him down to L.A. to watch the Vanderbilt game against USC. So he was quite the well-rounded sports fan yesterday. So
well done.
That was good stuff.
I'm proud of
but
him.
But, yeah, you have to tip your hat to the Titans for sure, because everything we talked about last week, Darren, about things that might give you hope, right? Gronkowski's not out. Or Gronkowski's probably not going to play. That maybe makes it easier to defend them. Well, maybe you take a look at it. Dean Pease has had success. You know, the Ravens have had success. Would they try to take a page out of that book? They absolutely did that, and it worked well. And then the biggest thing for me was the mental. Was the moment too big? You know, playing against the Patriots. They clearly weren't ready for that last year in the playoffs, but they came right out from the start and believed they could win that game. I thought that was the most impressive thing, the confidence level that they had right from the start.
Well said. Also, our thoughts are with those folks out in Southern California. Have you been able to see any effects from the wildfire?
We can't see it. You know, from our hotel, you know, we're south of where it is. Now, we drove into L.A. last night, and we were asking, you know, our driver and some of the people there, you know, how close are you and things. And they said, you know, a couple of days ago, it was awful. They're fighting as hard as they can to contain it now. So they're making some progress. What we have seen is in our hotel, it appears that there have been some families that have taken, you know, shelter here. They're staying here in our hotel just because I guess they're not sure, you know, if it's safe in their area. They have their dogs, you know, they have their pets here. You don't normally see people walking around with dogs and pets in a hotel lobby, especially a nice hotel like this, but they do. So it's affecting a lot of people for sure. It's on everybody's mind.
Good stuff. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll check in with you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Willie Donick out in Anaheim. Predators and Ducks tonight. Puck drop at 9 o'clock, pregame at 8 o'clock. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is what I know coming up before we get out of here this hour. That's coming up at 11:45. Tell us what you know. I know something I'm going to reveal next segment. And then the third hour, we're going to hear a little bit of Jeremy Pruitt's press conference, and then we'll catch up with Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal, WNML. Talk about the Vols' big win. They're sitting there 5-5 on the season. I mean, they are in great shape with Missouri at home, which is the CBS game of the week. It'll be on News Channel 5. And then they'll be here to take on Vanderbilt to finish out their season. So they could go 7-5. So we'll get into all of that in the third hour with Vince Ferrara and Derek Mason, former Titans wide receiver, one of the co-hosts of Morning Drive here on the station. We'll kick off the fourth and final hour at 1 o'clock. We'll also hear some of Mike Vrabel's press conference in the final hour as well. Speaking of the Titans' big win over the Patriots, they win 34-10. Steve, we were talking about how the Predators' win probably is going to come at a cost with Victor Arvidsson. What's the news? Don't know, but very sad and scary story coming out of Nissan Stadium, where a fan that was at the game was critically injured in the second half after he lost his balance and accidentally fell over the lower level railing through the awning, you know, that covers up the tunnel where the team goes in. And it was a 37-year-old man from Goodlettsville, and he had to be transported to Vanderbilt Hospital, where he's in critical but stable condition.
Yeah, just an awful, story, and I know you've been down in that tunnel, as have I, many times before and after games. That's probably a 17, 18, 19-foot fall from there, depending on how high you up were up in the tunnel. And, I mean, it just sounds like he was leaning over the railing trying to get a T-shirt that had been fired up there during one of these timeout things and just – you know, got a little too far, lost his balance, and those awnings, I mean, they're just tarps. They're not going to support you if you fall over. And
it's like the helmet we wore, the baseball helmet we wore when we were kids, right?
Yeah.
It's not a protective device.
No, it is not. But just a really sad thing. It does sound like he's in stable condition, so hopefully that is a good sign, you know, even though he is critical that things have stabilized and they've got a good shot to help him get back to health. But on a day that was really nothing short of a celebratory day at Nissan Stadium because of what the home team did, that's certainly a down note.
Very, very scary situation. So our thoughts are with him and his family and friends as they deal with this. That's just not a story you expect to talk about after game. But we have had stories like this happen. And for him right now in stable but critical condition, that's actually a good thing. We've talked about, especially in baseball, people falling over the upper deck railings and losing their lives over this stuff, or falling in the outfield over the railing down and hitting the people die at sporting events falling over railings. I got to be honest, I've always thought this for a long time. When you think about any arena or stadium, whether it's a football stadium, a baseball stadium, I've always wondered, because I've sat in those seats, right there on the railing, and it doesn't take anything, especially for a tall guy like me, you know, to stand up and the railing comes at just above your knee like, it's not very high up. It's about midway up my leg, you know, somewhere around my thigh area, and it wouldn't take anything. Somebody accidentally bump you. I've always thought, like, man, this is – you know, I'm surprised, honestly, it doesn't happen more.
Yeah, it is a little scary because you're right. I mean, they're obviously built in that way to give you the best views, and they're built steep to give you the best views. But when you do that, you're right. It makes for a combination that if just the right thing happens or the wrong thing happens, it could be a very scary situation. Unfortunately, we had that yesterday here in Nashville, and like you said, thoughts and prayers go out to the – man who right now is fighting pretty hard.
If they were to win the next two, what would the crowd look like in Nissan Stadium for the Jets game?
I think
it'll impact? In other words, because we've talked about it. You know, we were kind of poking fun at Dan Fouts. Like, have you ever done a Titans game, Dan? Answer, yes, you have. Have you ever done a Patriots game? Like, duh. Eagles and Patriots right now, the best looks they've had this season, where it looks – really good on television, it looks like a packed house, is because the Eagles had about 20,000, and what would you say was there yesterday?
It was a little harder to 25. Tell yesterday because they're roughly the same colors, and so it was a little hard.
Yeah.
You weren't spotting out green in the crowd yesterday. Plus, it was cold enough that a lot of people, I think, were just wearing coats and things like that. But I mean, there was probably 20,000 Patriots fans easily.
The Jets are not bringing anybody. So I guess what I'm getting at is a game where it's going to be cold. We know that's that time of year. But if this team is right there in the thick of things and, you know, the rest of their season, that final, what would that be? The final five games, the final push.
Four of them are home.
Four of them are home. What is going to be the impact at Nissan Stadium? Does this market rally behind this team and show up and support them?
I think if they win even just one of the next two and have a winning record going into December, I think those first two games against the Jets and the Jaguars will be fairly well attended. Now, the Jaguars game is a Thursday primetime game, which maybe makes it a little weird. But I think fans will be there for that. And then it's up to them to keep winning. You keep winning, you put yourself in a position in the division, or you put yourself in a position to get a wild card, I think your final two games have pretty good crowds at the end. If you struggle here and you lose, then I think you run yourself into danger of playing in front of half-empty stadiums late in December.
Because, as you know, right now it is translating to television. The ratings in this market are good. People are watching. People are paying attention.
Sure.
People want us to talk about it. And that's a good thing. We just haven't exactly seen that on showing up, the final thing, showing up to the stadium and bringing that true home field advantage. And I know it's not just the Titans. It's everybody in sports deals with these challenges. I remember having a conversation with Mike Hyka, who covers the Dallas Stars for DallasStars.com, and he's talked about that market, like how the Stars get it. They do the right things. They do all the marketing. They're out in the community. They're doing all the right things, and really the last thing for them to truly capture everybody, because that market's tough, right? I mean, sure. it's all about
There's
the Cowboys.
A lot going on there.
And you've got you've got the Mavericks, you've got the Rangers. I mean, it's a four sport town, and yeah, it's a huge market, but there's a lot of attention elsewhere, and it's not easy to capture, you know, those hockey fans. And they've done a really good job of doing the right things. And he said literally the last thing to push it over the edge is because they've been doing a lot more losing than winning in the last 8 years. It's truly about winning. And that would just tilt the scales, and then it would be the perfect, I guess, the perfect setup in that market for talking about a packed house for every Stars home game.
Well, I think we've seen that here with the Titans, don't you, Darren? Because I don't think the Titans have really done a tremendous job marketing in the community in terms of fan involvement. I mean, the Predators are far and away better than them at that. But I do think over the last really two calendar years, from the midpoint of 2 years ago when they kind of made a run to eventually get to 9-7, I think we have seen an uptick in attendance. Now, it's not what probably Titans fans or the organization want. They're not selling out or getting 65,000 for every game. But I think there has been more people going in and putting butts in the seats. And when they've been there, they've been loud. There were some games last year. I remember the Baltimore and Cincinnati game last year. Fans were into it. They probably won games because of fans getting off their seats and being loud and causing false starts and things like that late in the game. Yesterday, 4th and 1, you get a false start that pushes it back to 4th and 6. That was really the last chance the Patriots had. So I think the fans are starting to slowly turn around and the crowds are starting to slowly pick up. But you're right, they're not there yet, and they need to keep winning to do it.
It's an uptick. It's not a full buy-in. And let me give you an example, because we just talked about how many Patriots fans were there. I had a couple examples of buddies that sent me a text. I didn't even solicit them. I didn't ask them, hey, did you go? They just felt the need to tell me. They know how much this is discussed all the time. They have several tickets, lower bowl, and they decided to sell off some to recoup, right? Because you get the crime that is the NFL, where everybody has to pay full price for preseason games. It's a ridiculous thing that goes on throughout the league. So you make season ticket holders pay full price for preseason, which is a joke. Then you've got PSL and you've got all that stuff. So to recoup that, one buddy sold two. What do you think he got? For two tickets, lower bowl.
I bet he got $500.
$800 for the pair.
Wow.
The other buddy sold two, lower bowl for the pair, got $900.
Wow. Doesn't surprise me.
And right now, as long as – that's why I'm getting it, there's not that full buy-in. If they were going into that game 8-1, 7-1, I think probably it's different right now, because I know I've talked to Predators fans that had the opportunity to really make a ton of money in these playoff games, and they chose to pass. They chose – now, not everybody, but I'm saying I have examples of people that said, wow, this is really tough.
Sure.
But I'm going to say no, because I want to be a part of this. And so that is not happening yet.
I feel like Titans fans would probably do the same thing if your option was a playoff game at Nissan Stadium. They haven't had that yet. I doubt they'd be selling those as much. But your point's exactly right. If you have to pay, whatever, $1,000 or more a season for your season tickets there, if you can make $500 off one ticket to one game, wouldn't you? Or the Eagles game earlier this year. Probably make $300 or $400 off that ticket. You could sell your tickets to two games. Now, they're the biggest games on the schedule, but you could sell your tickets to two games and make your money back for the season. It's hard to fault people, you know, just reasonable people who understand the economics of the situation. It's hard to fault them for that. Now, as a fan or as a team, you hope your fans want to show up, especially to the biggest games. But that's what we've kind of created here. Nashville's so cool. It's an easy destination place. It's the number one spot for all these teams and their fans to come. So the tickets are going up. It's been easy to get in the stadium in the past. And so now this has become a destination where people are willing to pay big money. And I don't fault the fans for cashing in on that.
I don't need a business degree. They're $100 face value. One made four times a ticket. The other made 4.5 times a ticket. I mean, that's when you're not completely bought in.
Yeah.
And it's I can't miss. Like, I can't, you know, I want. I get it.
Well, he just bought his tickets for next year with that.
Exactly. So, all right, we'll come back. Tell us what you know to wrap up the second hour. That's next. Tell us what you know. It's very open-ended. It's very easy. 737-1025. 737-1025. Tell us what you know. For example, this is what I know, Steve, and watching college football games this weekend and this season. College football kickers stink.
Yep.
They are awful.
Hashtag college kickers.
How is that? You have one job. You are on a scholarship. That is your one job. You're getting your school paid for. And your job is to hit through the goalpost. A little football through the goalpost. And you watch the games around on Saturday. And like I said, it's been all year. Littered with miss after miss after miss after miss. It is unbelievable. In the Ole Miss Texas A&M game, what did he miss? A 22-yarder?
Mm-hmm.
22 yards. You're a Division I kicker in the SEC and you can't hit a 22-yard field goal? What are you doing? Why do you have a free ride? I mean, it has to send coaches just up a pole, right? I mean, how do they deal with that?
Well, think about Nick Saban. He's figured out how to fix everything in that program
except
and make it
kicker.
Incredible. He's never had a good kicker.
Not never. He's had, but for the most part, his body of work, you're right.
Alabama college kicker deserves its own hashtag. That's how bad it's been over the years. By the way, probably some Bears fans today thinking this could extend to the NFL with Cody Parkey's day yesterday. He hit the upright four times and missed them all. That is not good.
It is a bad year. By the way, you're right. In the NFL, too, Mason Crosby had one of those games. Every Browns kicker, every Chargers kicker. Mm-hmm. Right? What kicker are they on this year? Three?
Too many.
I mean, kicking is horrible in football.
Yeah.
Why is
it's a
that?
Tough skill. It's a tough skill.
But what, like it hasn't always been tough? Why does it seem like now kickers are just – they're – El Stinko.
Good question.
All right, what do you know?
This goes a little bit to what we just talked about in the last segment, but right now Nashville is the it city, and we have all these fan bases coming. We've seen the Bears do it in the past. We've seen Green Bay do it. We saw the Eagles do it earlier this year. We saw the Patriots do it this weekend. These fan bases that come to Nashville in droves, get their expensive hotel reservations, spend their money all weekend long, drink us out of beer downtown, make all the noise possible leading up to the game, and then when it's over, they walk out of Nissan Stadium with their head between their legs. Their spirits are different after the game is over. And so for everybody wanting to talk about the attendance and things like that, this is what I know. The Titans have a home field advantage because even when the other team's fans fill it up, they still win. I think it's 13-16 or something like that there now. They are winning at Nissan Stadium, so that's what I know. Even when the other team infiltrates it, Nissan Stadium is a home field advantage for the Titans.
There you go. And something I think I know, I think Todd Bowles is going to get shown the door today when he shows up for work. I'm surprised we haven't seen anything
yet. If not
yet.
Today, very soon.
I mean, they're going into a bye week.
Speaking of a firing, how about Bobby Petrino getting – put out, that's not surprising, but they actually announced it while his coach's show was on the air. Now, I believe it was taped. I don't believe he was actually in the studio when this happened, but literally the Bobby Petrino coach's show was on TV yesterday morning when the scroll went across the bottom of the screen that said, breaking news, Louisville has fired head coach Bobby Petrino.
And by the way, what do you think happened today at Jeff Brohm's press conference?
Jeff, would you like to be the head coach
of
Louisville?
Yeah, I've already been seeing quotes, and he's absolutely sidestepping that big time. Like, I'm happy here. Yeah. It's not appropriate for me to talk about.
For two more weeks.
That's what he's talking about today. Are you going to Louisville?
For two more weeks, he has to sidestep right. It. Then he can just do it.
Doug, tell us what you know.
This is Jeff. jovial as we are here in Tennessee about the Titans winning and how we defeated the two Super Bowl opponents, this is what I know. I've infiltrated the enemy's camp and listened to 98.5 Sports Hub in Boston. They're not so happy. They're blaming everything on Tom's age, to them releasing players, and even to the fact that he didn't make OTA. So they're not so happy in the Boston area. I infiltrated the camp to listen. They're not happy today.
Thank you, Doug. And guess what? They've got 2 weeks to discuss.
Yes, they do.
So rarely are they talking about three losses in their first, what, nine games?
Ten games?
Okay. Three losses in their first 10. See, and Tom Brady has gone, what, 2 weeks in a row without throwing a touchdown pass?
Yeah, which is crazy in and of itself. But here's the thing. You know, we talk about the Titans. What do they do from this? How do they build on it? Here's another thing that I pretty much know about the Patriots. At 7-3, they're going to win the AFC East. They're going to be in the playoffs, and they're probably going to be there at the end when you get a healthy Gronkowski back. So as bad as it looked yesterday, who do you have more questions about? The 7-3 Patriots moving forward off of yesterday's loss, or the 5-4 Titans who broke through yesterday? To me, there's no question. I have more questions about what the Titans can do.
Yeah, the Patriots have earned the pass because of their history, right? You do get you do get the kiss from all the past of, well, they've figured this stuff out before. They'll probably figure it out again.
Well, and they've been announced dead before, too, and they keep on
absolutely
winning.
Absolutely. The dynasty is over. Tom Brady is done. You know, the whole thing, we've gone through all this before. So I'll be curious to see. I didn't think I would ever see a game like that yesterday where the Patriots waved the white flag at the end of the game.
It was stunning.
Midway through the fourth quarter, they just said, we give up. We'll see you on the other side. I didn't think I would see that. Adam, up in Portland. Adam, what do you know?
What's up, man? Hey, I'm going non-sports related. It's just something that's weighing on me today. This is what I know. I have never, in 32 years of my life, I have never gotten joy from another person handing me their cell phone and making me watch something on their cell phone, either a video or see a meme or look at pictures of their kids. Like, I have never took that phone, handed it back to them, and went, I'm really happy I seen that. And that's what I know. Like, don't hand me your cell phone. I don't want to see whatever's on there. I'm busy. Like, never progress my life.
Do you have an example that sent you over the edge?
Yeah, dude. It was a dude at work, just a stupid video. And I'm like, oh, my God. I don't want to. Obviously, what you think's funny is not what I think's funny. But even if it was Dave Chappelle, man, I'm working. Like, why do I want to look at that right now? And I'm not just going to get in that mode to where I want to look at this and then back in the work mode and then people with their kids and, oh, my, yeah, you got a cute kid, whatever. Like, if it's not my kid, I don't really care, you know what I mean? So just nothing on your cell phone is going to make me happy, ever.
Wow. Okay, Adam. I hope you feel better, man.
Don't forward any, like, funny videos or tweets to Adam later today.
Oh, crap. If it's not my kid, I don't care. Co-worker, stay away from me. I did see a video of a Patriots fan in the upper deck shredding.
That's a classic.
A Titans flag with her teeth and her meat hooks for hands before the game. I guess it was before the game. Because I said.
Might have been during because.
Well, no,
she was
said on Twitter, I was like, well, clearly she had her back to the field the entire game because the only shredding was the Titans of the Patriots. Yeah. And somebody came back and said that. It was before the game.
Maybe I understand where Adam was coming from here, though, because I had some friends from Boston who came down for the game this weekend, and I saw that this morning and sent it all to them as they were at the airport getting ready to leave. And I said, was she in your party? None of them seemed to find that very funny.
They didn't find it
humorous. Maybe I see Adam's point.
Maybe that's probably how your friends felt, just like Adam felt.
Don't show me anything.
I don't want to see your crappy videos.
I don't
videos.
Want anything from you.
Dave in Brentwood, what do you know?
Geez, I think Adam thought it was "Don't Be That Guy" segment, but oh well.
I know, my goodness.
Jeez. Hey, I just turned in. I don't know if anyone said this, but this is what I know. I know I have never seen a better trolling in your face call than that Mariota flat pass.
Amen.
On the very next play.
I think that was a poker move. I'll see your move and I'll raise you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good stuff, Dave. That was literally the Titans offensive staff thumbing their nose at the Patriots and going, okay,
oh,
watch this.
Oh, for sure. But the other thing about just that sequence is that play shouldn't be in the Patriots' repertoire.
No.
It shouldn't be. So it was complete desperation that they went to it. That play, I think, is part of the base offense for the Titans because of how good Mariota is on his feet and his athletic ability and all that. So it's the perfect thing to come right back and rub it in their nose.
Final one, Thomas up in Madison. Thomas, what do you know?
I know yesterday was an excellent game. They played a wonderful game start to finish. Brady, I feel, is far from over. Tennessee had New England's number. Vrabel, as we all know, was once an assistant to Belichick. The only thing that worries me is I'm afraid the Titans, you know, they had a great game, but what's it going to be after this? And now I'll hang up and listen.
Already the doom and gloom.
Well, that's what we said. We've seen it before.
Yep.
Can it be different this time?
We'll come back. We'll hear a little bit from Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt. And then we'll check in with Vince Ferrara. All that coming up to kick off the third hour of Darren and Donick. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.